A little bit of scene setting for the project, just to give you a bit of the context of where this comes from. Then I'll be talking about the design and implementation processes that went on in that project. Then I'll have a look at what went on, the analysis if you like. Then I'll be going on and describing the impact that it had on the business. Then I'll get out my crystal ball and have a look at what the future might hold. And then I'll draw some conclusions. So for a bit of background, there is a certain city council in New Zealand that wishes to remain anonymous that is putting in a bus passenger information system. This is designed to give waiting passengers at bus stops information about the destinations of forthcoming buses and the expected times of arrival of those buses. Also, on the buses, there are signs, the sorts of signs that you see in the airport lounges, which indicate when you're on the bus the name of the next stop and the attractions that you can find there. The prime contractor to that, for that work, is a firm called Saab ITS. They are a branch of the car manufacturers in Sweden, and their office is in Adelaide. ScreenTech, which is a company here in Perth, won the subcontract to supply the signage to that contract. The system monitors where buses are on the circuit, and it's linked to traffic lights with the aim of letting buses play catch-up. Those of you who've ever noticed the herding instinct of buses, I suspect, will go with that one. The first phase of this project started in April last year and being completed next week. The following phases will be completed over the following months. It's split into three phases. There's something just to give a little bit more light into the words that I put in there. A couple of pretty pictures there with waiting passengers, buses, and communicating via a GPRS network. That was a little interesting. Yeah, go on. Oops, what's at the bottom? There we go. Central control facility. Basically a computer system. The GPRS side of things is new technology, and they're using existing technology, existing landlines between the control facility and the traffic lights. Let's move on to the design phase then. Any system like that doesn't happen just by accident. You've got to think about how it's going to work. How are we doing there? Right. Let's play juggle a bit, shall we? For those of you who are not familiar with such signs, they all have a single board computer inside them. It's a rather cut-down version of what you'll find on your traditional laptop or desktop, and a rather more sophisticated or powerful version of what you'll find in your CD or DVD player. There are a range of suitable single board computers out there. So the sorts of things we were looking for needed to have disk on chip. Any of you who have driven on a bus feeling the vibrations, an ordinary hard disk is going to smash itself to bits. We needed the usual I.O. facilities, basically serial ports. We also had the benefit of a USB port, which is useful for software updates. And we needed a screen and keyboard for software development. As is usual, we need an operating system. We needed the COM port facilities, TCP/IP stack to talk to the GPRS network, a dialer for it. We needed sound output as well for the benefit of blind and partially sighted travellers. That's actually part of the legal requirement in New Zealand law. And VGA output. And yes, for those of you been able to see underneath the paperwork, Windows does provide it. So then we thought, yeah, if Windows is good enough, this is the first part of the design phase. And Windows CE is marketed as an operating system of choice for such embedded systems. We looked at it for a few days. It came from the same supplier that I'd been familiar with for years. It's customizable. So it meant that the design issues and the development issues of cross-platform development certainly didn't exist. But then we started asking ourselves a few questions. Like, how long was it going to take to get a copy of this? 6 weeks. And by the way, it's going to cost you $40,000 just for the one-off development. Oh, and by the way, there's a small matter of a per-unit license fee of roughly $60 a go. And we were supposed to ship 1,000 units. And that fee comes to something like $100,000. Don't know about you. That's an awful lot of bottles if you pay for it. Tipple. Well, why not? Your very good health, ladies and gentlemen. So basically, it was going to take far too long and it was going to be far too expensive. Oh. What were the consequences going to be of all this? Missed deadlines. Bad news. No repeat business with Saab IPS. Not good. What were we going to do about it? Well, I've been dabbling with Linux for a few years by then. Very lightly dabbling. I really don't know, didn't know my way around it. And so I mentioned this as a serious alternative to the CEO of ScreenTech. Now, he's a man of no technological prejudices. And so he said, right, we'll give it a go. Very nice. At about the same time, a Linux expert knocked on the door and said, give us a job. And so we interviewed him, and he joined the team. Now, I'll have to step back just a little bit and let you know what the state of software development was by that time. Software had already been half written in C. The next step was to port it into a, for me, unfamiliar environment. And for the Linux expert, what the heck was this software doing anyway? How on earth was it structured? How was it working? Another big unknown was GPRS. Just to leap forward a bit, the goal was still achieved within budget, within timescale, and to the required standard. Saab ITS is very happy with the product. Thank you very much. So what were we doing? Jumping from Windows onto Linux halfway through a project. I imagine some of you will have worked with typical dyed-in-the-wool managers in the past. So yeah, his reaction would be switching midstream like that is going to cause unnecessary delay. And he will come out with the usual claims of Linux comes from a proliferation of vendors, there's no consistency of product between them, and it's impossible to support. Those are the claims. In fact, I found those to be its precise strength. There's a range of choice, a range of distributions available for need, and I've actually found a very good level of support, both free and paid, that can be called on from time to time. The quality manager at Saab ITS, once it became apparent that we did know what we were doing and we were going to succeed, later admitted to us that when he heard about the switch, he threw up his hands in horror and said, the whole project is now bound to fail. We proved him wrong, I'm glad to say. That's, if you like, the story. I'd like to analyze what went on. And I'd like to split this into two areas. First of all, the factors that led to the success of that switch, and if you'd like to look at it on the downside, the lessons that we learned. So I must add that those lessons weren't negative. I present the following factors for success in no particular order. It's just the way they happen to come out on the PowerPoint sheets. Factors for success. The use of C. I'd used C before, and general perception has it that this is the lingua franca for this type of work. Also took on board the fact that the target operating system had not yet by this time been specified. It could have been Windows, it could have been Linux, it could have been any other operating systems that specialized, for example, with digital signal processors, or an other, about which we knew nothing. Portability was also an issue. It means that we could develop the application on a wide range of platforms, basically a platform of our choice. And in the event that the big red bus decided to come and get me, there would be a large number of C programmers who could take my place. We discounted C++ on the basis that the C++ might not be available as a cross-compiler for the final environment. Everything that you can do in C++, you can do in C. It might just take a little longer. Next factor for success, Linux. It's a mature product, around since 1991. Wide range of support, as I've mentioned before. It's continuing to evolve to meet new needs, new hardware. It's supported by a good file system now, ext3. Next factor for success. The Linux expert knows a lot about Linux fundamentals. Things like file systems and editors, things that I was quite new to. Knows a lot about the support applications that we would need. He recommended SOX for the audio output. Knows a lot about rebuilding kernels, so useful when you're trying to rebuild an operating system that's going to fit into limited memory. And he saved the team weeks of time. I've already mentioned the lack of technological prejudice, the corporate culture, if you like. Go into some companies and you suggest moving away from Windows and they go, ah! Also, he backed his technical staff fully. Terrific environment to work in. There's a wide range of applications available. Applications suitable for different environments. I started to have to learn Nano in a hurry when MCEdit wouldn't fit in. And those are the applications that we use in Linux to actually get our product out the door. Another factor for success, the customizable kernel. You can get at the source code, you can recompile it, you can do what you need with it. Take somebody who knows what they're doing, understands all the modules that you need, recompile it, you have yourself a working kernel in 30 minutes. Compare that with 6 weeks, and even if we were to pay our Linux expert the exorbitant sum of $1,000 an hour, it still leaves us change of $39,500. Thank you. We also don't have this rather insidious per-unit license fee. So if we decided to ship yet another 1,000, that saves us another $60,000. Perhaps the most important is open source, the philosophy of open source. Choice of distributions. Now, the detractors claim that this creates a confusion, and as I said before, it's strength. There are fewer compatibility issues between various issues of Linux. Compare that with the streams coming out of Seattle. And I've had no end of problems with incompatibilities between Windows 98 ME and Windows 2000 XP. Still gives me headaches. No service packs that they seem to come endlessly out of Seattle. No increasing the onerous licensing issues, which can create a nightmare for systems designers and developers. I've been a victim of those. Distributions that we used. There's an update on this from the slide, which I learned yesterday. We used Red Hat 7.1 and 7.3 later when it came along. Debian 2.2, which is actually used as the source for the target system, and Nopix 3.1 on a couple of occasions. There was none of this business of, we will leave your computer disabled for 3 days while we generate a new product key for you because Windows XP will not install. All that sounds like it's a one-way street and points to a very rosy future for Linux. Life isn't quite like that. There were some trade-offs. Some of what I'm about to offer you'll recognize from your own experience, and I'm quite sure that you would be able to add more to those that I'm about to present. While we may have apparently saved ourselves $100,000, hence the title of this presentation, some of it had to go on paying the Linux expert. He can't, after all, live on thin air. Without actually going and auditing screen text books, I suspect that the net cost of implementing Linux was quite close to the original budget. At least the CEO was happy. Yeah. No. Say again? Well, 100,000 was completely excluded. We hadn't allowed for something that monstrous. And yeah, licensing fee was if you like, the biggest component of that. So. Next thing, stress. It was me that had put my neck on the line and said Linux. What happens to me if all this goes horribly wrong? And then once we'd started, I got on a very steep learning curve. How on earth do I get my head around all this lot? There was extra time taken involved. The port took 2 weeks. It would have taken the Linux expert 2 days or perhaps less because he's learning his way around the system. The delays were caused about ignorance, my own ignorance, about how to drive the COM ports in the new environment, how to drive the VGA output in a way that we wanted, and differences in things like editors. Another lesson learned. I personally benefited immensely from the transition. I felt I learned a lot, understood more as a result. Having learned a lot, I felt as though I'd been on a steep learning curve for months. Now that the project's over, the brain is not feeling quite so overblown. I know that I've still got heaps more yet to learn. I've barely scratched the surface. And perhaps it's this learning curve that might put some people off. Now, no business process is complete unless it can be reviewed, with the aim of improving the business. And this particular exercise, the transition to Linux, is no exception. So we reviewed it in the light of the fact that it was a fixed cost contract. The Linux solution cost less than the original $100,000. The solution was just as effective, and so that had a direct impact on the bottom line. Instead of losing a heap of dough, we managed to make a nice tidy profit on it. Thank you. Linux is now the operating system of choice for all our embedded systems. And for our future projects, we plan to use them on things like in trains, on stations, on buses, street signage, things like variable speed limit signs, tidal traffic flow signs, and in airports. Sorts of things you see above check-in desks. Having said that, ScreenTech has a large investment in signs, the bigger signs that you sometimes see around the place. For example, at racecourses and at football stadia, we've got signs that are about 5 meters high and 25 meters long. Big. That's all built using Windows-based software. The economic case for switching from the Windows environment for that work into Linux doesn't yet exist. But when it does, we might be looking for something like Delphi as a coding language. It exists. Is it suitable? I'm after people's advice. Pick your brains later, if I may. Right. It enriched the lives of two people. The Linux expert and I, we exchanged technical understanding, and we also exchanged philosophical viewpoints, both coming at it from rather different traditions. We both understand rather more now. Screen tech is in a stronger market position, and as such is maintaining its competitive edge. It's looking forward into the future. We've got better budget planning, better cost control, and just to keep the bank manager happy, better cash flow forecasting. It means I get paid more regularly. Well, when a check goes halfway around the world and it's stuck in the back of his checkbook, yeah, it can be embarrassing. Another impact on the business, screen tech will now be a mixed Windows Linux environment. Saab ITS, I believe, are happy for it to be known that they also run a mixed environment, which raises the possibility now of exchanging documents between the two organizations in some other format other than MS Office. Now, unfortunately, neither company can afford to abandon Microsoft Office because both companies exchange documents electronically with other organizations. Again, there's an update on that. I had an approach from a company yesterday who do not exchange electronic documents, and the complaint from the CEO was, I've had enough of paying money to Microsoft. So what went through my mind was Linux Open Office. Possible future trends. This is where I'm going to have to get out my crystal ball and make some predictions. And anybody who makes predictions automatically make themselves a hostage to fortune. Unfortunately, if you don't make any predictions, it makes a mockery of any planning exercise. So here, for what it's worth, is my crystal ball. And I'd like to look at it from two angles. The office desktop environment and other environments, for example, technical environments. Before I go too far into that, I'd like to have a quick review of the long-term trends. For those of you who've been around for a sufficiently long time, you may remember the phrase, here we go, nobody got sacked for buying IBM. Anybody here remember that? Hands up. Oh, quite a few of you. Well done. Now, today the story seems to be nobody gets sacked for buying Microsoft. Anybody heard anybody being sacked for buying Microsoft? Thank you very much. Back in the 1980s, there was a proliferation of standalone applications. Again, without integration, some of you may remember them even. Lotus 1-2-3. Any hands? Yeah? Quite a few of you. Harvard Graphics, WordPerfect. Thank you very much. Yeah. Word is buggy. Okay. But then we come along to the year 2000, and we start asking ourselves, how far can integration go? This is where I start spreading sedition in the ranks. Question for you. Has Office XP completely ousted Office 2000? Thank you very much. And I would suggest that the reason for that is a very marginal cost performance benefit, if indeed it's positive. How many organizations do you see that put adverts in papers and requests for tenders that say documents must be submitted in Word 97 format? Yeah, quite a few. Word 97. That was 6 years ago. I suspect that there's an awful lot of companies out there not upgrading. So I'd suggest that this is the end of the road for integration. So what's Microsoft's reaction been to this? They diversified. Going into the entertainment field. Xbox coming out. Is that again? Microsoft Media Center. You're catching up with me. So what's the future of Microsoft Office? Could they consolidate it? Well, maybe they could, but I'm not sure how they'd do it. They could continue to enhance it, to innovate, as their lawyers love to say. But I'd suggest that that's not going to be a long-term viable solution. It leaves a nice little gap for other companies. They're going to start wanting to jump in on the bandwagon. Whether, like OpenOffice, they target Windows or Linux or both will depend very much on the future economics when those decisions are taken, at which point my crystal ball promptly goes cloudy. As the other versions of Office become more available, the case for actually using the Microsoft version weakens. And rational economics would suggest that new installations go for Linux and with the appropriate Office software to go with it. So what's likely to happen to IBM? Microsoft. Will it slide quietly off its perch in the same way that IBM did? Well, IBM's still around. They're not the case of if you don't buy IBM, you get sacked. Or will it vanish, just like Systime, Segundo Data Systems, and ITL? Anybody remember those names? One or two? Some of us very long in the tooth. Yeah. I see buried heads and all that. It might well happen if they carry on. And I can see the Windows operating system becoming much more entertainment-oriented. I don't see Microsoft, despite the couple of recent announcements, wanting to give away the whole of the Windows source code. They're going to want to keep their dominance of the desktop as long as they can so that somebody can continue getting richer. Taking that review forward, I'd like to now look at what the future might hold for Linux and what it needs to do to continue gaining popularity. The level of technical expertise needed to install and maintain it needs to keep falling. Perhaps not as far as it does for the Windows equivalent. I'm excluding things like Windows servers. Once that cost continues to fall, I suspect that the existing trickle of migrants from one to the other will become something of a flood. The cost saving must become more apparent for that volume of transitions to grow. The herd effect there. I have heard so often from managers saying, well, if it's such a bloody good product, why aren't other people doing it? At which point, they sit on Windows again. And if you actually present a well-reasoned argument for moving from one to the other, the typical reaction will be, yes, you've identified the risk in the transition, but you've not applied sufficient weight to those risks. So again, you get blocked. The potential exists, and I'm not sure how big a risk it is, of a new rival operating system that might come out of the blue. Who knows what somebody's going to get up to in the next 10 years. That's, if you like, a slightly jaundiced view of the commercial environment. I'd like to move on to, if you like, the technical areas, things that you find in research labs, like the preceding speaker using Linux. The decision makers there, according to my prejudice, are somewhat less blinkered than what you find in commercial organizations. You have a wider range of choice for exchanging data. You're not exchanging documents, you're exchanging data and information. The Word 97 format no longer becomes a monopoly. And in the limit case of standalone systems, you don't need to exchange any data with anybody, so that's rare. So the summary predictions. The Office desktop, Windows, is going to be the dominant for quite a while yet. Don't ask me to stick a year on it. I don't yet know. In the other environments, I suspect Linux installations will overtake the Windows installations really rather sooner. so to a conclusion. I don't know about you, but when I'm doing a job, I much prefer to have the right tool for the job. For those of you who are planning to drive back to Sydney, you might want to drive across the Nullarbor Desert. I offer you a choice. An old Mini without air conditioning, but otherwise reliable, or four-berth camper van, complete with air conditioning, GPS, radio, power, steering, anything else you care to think of. I don't know about you, but I know which one I'd choose. On the other hand, trying to park a Palace on wheels in the local car park is not my idea of fun. I'd rather take something small and useful. And I suspect that the same comment, or often that the same comment, applies to Windows and Linux, the right tool for the job. Final prediction, more dual operating system companies in the future. Homogeneous environments, right. Now, one thing I'd like to do, that's the end of the formal presentation and in your handouts, but I was going through the BBC News website this morning. There's a little article I'd like to bring to your attention. And the headline goes like this. Life looks good for Linux. For almost every technology company, business is a bit slow at the moment. A part, that is, for companies involved with Linux, the open source operating system. Many firms that sell software and services based around the free operating system are doing good business, and many large firms and governments are eagerly adopting the software. Even Microsoft, traditionally the archenemy of open source advocates, has started espousing some of the philosophy that drives the movement. Wow. The source code for Linux is open with anyone to scrutinize and tinker with. This has meant that Linux has become a more secure and reliable operating system than from firms such as Microsoft. This week, New York is hosting the Linux World Conference in Expo, an event which gives an insight into the state of open source software and reveals that it is regarding the future with more confidence than most. Hewlett-Packard recently announced that its Linux-related business now amounts to a sales of more than $2 billion a year. It's a lot of loot. Open source software is also rapidly finding favor with many governments and public bodies as its lack of license fees, reliability, and freedom to tinker proves a powerful draw. This week, the South African government declared itself an open source advocate. The Meta Group predicts that 45% of servers will be running Linux by the year 2007, at the latest. Similarly, analyst Gartner expects to see shipments of Linux server software to double in 2003 and generate £4 billion sterling in sales. I think that's pretty conclusive. Now, for those of you who have been dying to ask a question, any questions, ladies and gentlemen? Yes. You've got absolutely right. Yes, this was a lovely little one. Has anybody tried to make something utterly vandal-proof? You don't fancy hiding to nothing. One brave person has. Well done. Yeah, but then you get prosecuted for giving people a shock. I don't know about you, but I don't like having a shocking experience. Say again? I'll mention that to the anonymous certain city council in New Zealand. Yes, up at the back there. Right, I'm out to suggest that one. Down here.
Earlier you talked about buttons. Did you deploy the final product on the XP3?
I think it is going on the XP3. I didn't actually do the deployment, it was the Linux expert that did that. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Did you consider using a commercial embedded Linux distribution such as Mini or Linux or something like
No. Not being an expert myself, I went with this guy's opinion. But I'll tell him to do a bit of research into that. Yes, up at the back there. Ouch. Yeah.
Your talk's really important, but for the particularly IT people here, the very much programmer type, your relationship with the people in the kind of environment that need the IT support is quite important. And it's a bi-directional relationship. I've learned heaps from relating to very much IT type people. I hope also those learn stuff from relating to me and doctors. But it's really helpful.
Yeah, I suspect that could be said of an awful lot of projects as well. I've seen that time and time and time again. Yeah.
I think that's the key. Sometimes you just need to take a step and go, no.
Yeah.
The business case is this, and it's more important that you make money than that the original project.
Yeah. That's right, It was based around the 386.
Okay. And the second thing, the vandalism point, what did you do?
Steel cases. And ultimately, if somebody determined to put an axe through it, an axe will go through it.
The front of the steel case?
I'm not quite sure what the material was. I mean, a lot of thought was actually given to the design, because initially the GPRS modems were going to have an aerial stuck out the top. Yeah, well, this was actually one of the things that I worked on at the University of Arizona, telescope control. There was simply basically no operating system. I had control of the entire quad processor system. That was also in C. Any more questions? Yeah. It's called having an inquiring mind and saying, what can this technology offer me? At the back there. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. are we doing for time, yeah? Yeah.
So it's the relationship, and you find that you've covered off. So the programming and the IT work slightly changes the work practices in the environment that you're in, and the work practices change the IT. There's nothing more powerful than having a good relationship with your programmer type, like the hospital and the program where it works really well. Some of the secretaries were, I don't know, colorblind, I think.
Yeah. 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 One of the things that I think I can offer a slightly different angle on that particular start is that when I'm actually doing software design or software development, I put myself in the position of the user, having read the specification, say, how would I find it most ergonomic to use this particular system? And I suspect that what you're talking about there is an example of just that. Yeah.
How useful would it be to have a sort of feedback loop from the end
user? I think it's crucial. Yeah. Second? Yeah, okay. One last question, gentleman in the middle there. Not quite. We had $100,000 to gain, and I had a lot of sleepless nights to worry over. Well, the whole thing, the Linux side of things was an unknown quantity. It was unfamiliar to the firm. The whole thing might have gone belly up. That was the risk. Yes. Yes. Yeah. We would have done. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, time's up.